The Lessons Learned for Vets podcast is proud to be brought to you by AFMA, the American Armed Forces Mutual Aid Association. Established in 1879, they are the longest standing nonprofit association empowering military families with affordable financial solutions for generations, offering life insurance, wealth management, mortgages, survivor assistance, and other benefits. AFMA is here to support you through every stage of life. AFMA is dedicated to helping service members be financially and logistically ready for life after the military. To support you in this process, AFMA would like to offer you their free downloadable transition timeline, a step-by-step guide to help you create a comprehensive military transition plan. Let AFMA help you get ready for your next step by visiting AFMA.com/LL4V, that's AAFMAA.com/LL4V, or clicking the link in the show notes. Welcome to the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast, your military transition debrief from the veteran mentors who've gone before you. My name is Lori Norris, and I've been teaching veterans how to successfully navigate their military transition since 2005. I'm a civilian who speaks the language of all branches of the U.S. military, and I'm on a mission to educate veterans in the job search marketing process. This podcast shares the military transition hot washes and after-action reports of your fellow veterans to smooth your own path out of the military. Well, welcome to the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast. Last season, we did some surveys, and almost everyone in those surveys said they wanted more military transition Q&A sessions. So here we are with our first one of season three, and I will introduce you to our guest here in just a moment. But first, I want to put a call out there for anybody listening who is in the process of their transition. Don't be shy. Reach out. Let me know if you'd like to come on the show and ask your questions. And as my guest wrote to me today, when he sent me his questions, he said he felt like he was being selfish, that he was asking questions that only he would want to know. And I guarantee you, if you've had that question, another one of your fellow veterans have had that question. So if you'd like to be part of the show and join me on a military transition Q&A session, please join us. Don't be shy. Reach out to me and join us on the show. So without further ado, I would like to welcome my guest today, Cody Bowman. He sort of got voluntold into being on the show. He commented on something that I posted, and I invited him. So publicly, I said, hey, come on the show. So Cody, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Lori. Yeah, way to call me out there, right in the spotlight and make it, you know, strong arm me into coming on here. But it's an honor to be here chatting with you today.
You told me you listened to every episode, so you might as well be part of it at that point,
that's
right?
True. That's true. Ever since you and Chris McGee of the 20 Years Done podcast had your little chat, that's when I found out about Lessons Learned for Vets and have listened to every episode so far.
I got to get Chris back on here because he's got some big things going on. So
absolutely.
We will definitely have to do that. Well, Cody, tell me a little bit about you and kind of where you're at now and what led you to starting to listen to the show.
So I'm a current member of the South Dakota Air National Guard. I've spent the last 12 years in the Air Force as a tactical aircraft maintenance individual on the F-16. F-16 is all I know. Haven't switched airframes at all. Absolutely love it. I had the privilege of transitioning from active duty to the Guard after 6 years of service and to the normal two days a month and 2 weeks a year Guardsman status. This transition was very eye-opening for me at the time, and I now realized how underprepared I was to go through that transition. My goal, 9 years from now, God willing, if I make it to retirement, is to not make the same mistakes again. During my transition, I thought I had everything figured out, and I had landed that almighty job, interviewed for that position while I was overseas in Korea. And they said, hey, just get a hold of us when you get back to the States. And then I got a hold of them when I got back to the States, and my calls were never returned. This began my worrisome job hunt and trying to check that box. Luckily, I was only a guardsman for a year, and I got picked up for a full-time AGR status, which is all of my active duty benefits back to me. But that 1 year where I was a guardsman really was not an easy one. It definitely tested my marriage, and we repeatedly struggled to make ends meet. So I'm looking to do better and be more prepared for the next go around.
So you got 9 years to prep, right?
9 years.
And so you did a good thing by starting to listen to the show. And I asked you before we started recording today, I said, what do you think was the reason you struggled so much? And you said you'd be willing to talk to me a little bit about your first transition and really what you think went wrong.
Well, what I think went wrong was my focus. As you preach repeatedly on this show, my focus was just on making sure I was able to house and feed my family. So I needed that job. So I was super, super focused on that. And I sort of lost that trail when I thought I had a really well-paying job lined up. And then it was like, well, shoot, what do I want to do? And I lost my focus after I lost that sort of, I thought it was signed, sealed, and delivered package of a position.
So do you feel like maybe you put like all your eggs in that one basket of that one company, that one job? And once you had that and they said, yeah, we're good, you kind of quit the job search process, right? And you thought, well, we're set, right?
I would agree. Yeah.
And I know that, you know, it sounds counterintuitive to keep going, right? To keep looking, but you just never know what could happen. You never know what could happen with that job that you have lined up, but you also could never know what you might find that's even better. And I would rather have you turning down three job offers to take the one that's right for you than to find yourself in the position where you found yourself, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So maybe, you know, and I know that it feels almost disloyal, like, oh, I'm continuing to date after I asked my wife to marry me, right? So right. That's not what we're doing, right?
No, not at all.
So you're not being disloyal. You're looking out for yourself and for your well-being and your family and their well-being. And so, you know, you have to become, and you know, you've heard me say this too, is like, you have to become your own career manager. And that means putting yourself first in this job search process. So until you've got that signed, sealed, delivered offer in hand, and you've got a start date and all of that, I would continue just having feelers out there just in case.
Absolutely.
Now you know that, right?
Yeah, I learned the hard way.
So you came with some questions for me, right?
I did.
So let's go. You asked me your questions and let's see what we can come up with today.
All right. So we'll start off with the first one here. So it wasn't until actually a few years ago that I found my focus of what I want to do for after my military service. I actually stumbled upon it through trying to figure out what I wanted to do for an education, because the Air Force offers a program where you can transfer your CCAF degree credits through the AUABC to a bachelor's degree. Well, that's when I stumbled upon emergency management. I decided I still want to be in public service once I get out of the military. So I began to pursue my degree in emergency management, and I actually wrapped that up in November. And I start my master's in organizational leadership and public administration here in about a week. That'll be fun. So being an aircraft mechanic, from the outside looking in, from your perspective, what are similarities you see between aircraft maintenance and emergency management, or a complete career change like that?
All right. So first I'm going to be sneaky and I'm going to ask you a question and then I'll give you my answer. Okay. What was it about emergency management that attracted you to pursue that degree? Like, tell me a little bit about why emergency management for you.
Giving back to the community is the biggest piece, and being able to take care of people in a whole. I'm also a big planner. Like I enjoy planning ahead of times, drives my wife crazy sometimes, but having things planned out, getting places early, you know, the typical military mantra, if you're not 15 minutes early, you're late. And then I also feel like I do have my hands a little dabbled into some emergency response when it comes to aircraft emergencies, but I understand that emergency management is much more broad than that.
Much more grander scale than like an in-flight emergency, right? But yes, you have this. So I see a lot of correlations between what you do in aviation maintenance and emergency management, not environmental management, emergency management. And so I want to go through some of those and we'll kind of talk them through how we would put them on a resume or on your LinkedIn even. So obviously, first of all, you have to follow all the OSHA standards, right? So having that safety awareness of EPA regulations, hazardous material response, spill response. So planning the transportation of hazardous materials, the handling of jet fuel and all of those things, like you have already got that safety mindset built into you from aviation maintenance, right?
Absolutely.
And so all of that is related to emergency management. You talked already about being a planner. And so that was one of my lists. You've got really good strategic planning experience. So you've got to be able to take a task and plan it out from start to finish. What resources are you going to need? What support are you going to need? What equipment do you need to bring in? How long is it going to take you? And so you're used to working in that type of strategic planning environment, right? You're in a very highly regulated career field. So aviation maintenance, there's a lot of regulatory compliance. You have to document everything you do in accordance with the FAA standards and guidelines. And so you've got a lot of regulatory compliance already that goes into your job. Risk mitigation, right? You do that every day. You don't just like turn a wrench and hope for the best, right?
Right.
Your pilot does hopes that you don't. And so we do a lot of like risk assessment, vulnerability analysis, capability gap analysis in every day that you are out there working on an aircraft. So you've got a lot of risk management and risk mitigation. You do a lot of identifying potential obstacles. So that's emergency management is really about the planning first, right? Like what could go wrong? And then it's about the assessment, then it's the creating the plan, and then it's managing of the responses, right? The emergency. So you've done all of that. You respond to emergencies, like I said, hazmat spills or in-flight emergencies, right? You are on the flight line, you get a call that there's an IFE in progress. And so you've got to know the checklist to go through to be able to respond to that, to support that aircraft and that pilot, you know, helpfully down to the ground safely. And if not, you know what to do in that case, correct?
Correct.
Also, in that regard, you also know how to coordinate with first responders, how to communicate and coordinate with those responders to allocate those resources as necessary. I don't know all about like the different paths your career has taken, but as somebody who is in aircraft maintenance, you're likely going to go, you know, possibly through to the pro super level to, you might work in the mock. You might, you know, there's lots of places you could go. And all of this is going to be related. So look for opportunities throughout the next 9 years of your career where you can put that emergency management knowledge that you're gaining in your education to work. And so that you can get some tangible results that you can put on your resume and keep really good records for the next 9 years of, you know, like communication with stakeholders at all levels. So all the way from, you know, your fellow maintainers to the pilots, to the pro supers, to the wing commander, for heaven's sakes, you know, you are going to have to make those presentations, give those briefings. And so start documenting all of that and really think about like, did I put a program in place? Maybe you're F-16, so maybe you created, you know, like a FOD prevention strategy. And so we're not going to put FOD prevention strategy on your resume, but we could put a risk mitigation program. You created a risk mitigation program that reduced incidents by X percentage and prevented the loss of a $27 million asset and protected the lives of the local community, right? So that's a way of taking like something that's very aircraft related with FOD, which nobody knows what that is unless they've worked around an F-16. And so some people out there are going, what's FOD, right? So if you don't work around an aircraft, a jet engine, you may not know what FOD is. And then really translating it in a way that anybody could understand so that we can take it from like, I prevented it, you know, damage to this one aircraft to its public safety. Also think about the times that you're out there representing the Air Force or for yours is the guard, but with the public, you know, do they do air shows? Do you go out into the community and give presentations to schools or like, so again, just think about like any kind of public speaking opportunity. I would try to participate in that as well to help you with, you start building up those bullet points, if you will, on your resume. And then the other thing I will say is I want you to think about how to take your education and highlight that on your resume to get those keywords in there. And so for you, you know, sometimes we look at our education always goes at the bottom of our resume. It may not for you. If you feel like your most relevant information is your education, maybe you lead off with that. And maybe you get some courses listed in there to get some of those really good keywords in there, like emergency management and disaster preparedness and things like that. So, but even if you decide, you know what, I have some really good relevant experience to highlight, which I think is going to be the case, and your education still is at the end, definitely get some good keywords in there by highlighting some of the projects you've done, some of the classes you've taken, maybe some of the systems that you've worked on, like the National Incident Management System. Maybe you've took a class in that. And that's just another way of getting those keywords in there. So hopefully that helps. Did I give you a list of things that you didn't have on there already?
Oh yeah, there's a lot of insight that I got there just from, you know, I was so narrowly focused on my actual response to aircraft emergencies, not the broader scope of all the regulations and stuff that I do on a daily basis. And then you talked about getting particular things that help line up with emergency management. Conveniently enough, around the same time you volunteered me to come on your podcast, the bosses, there was an opportunity that became available for the unit emergency management representative. So I will be the AMXS squadron emergency management representative. So that'll be some real hands-on experience there. And then we'll do a selfless plug for the Power Over the Prairie air show here at the end of July. We'll have the Thunderbirds out to come perform for us, as well as a F-16 Viper demo team with some homeland roots here in South Dakota.
That's cool. I used to get the Thunderbirds flying over my house here in Arizona, but it's been a while since Luke Air Force Base has hosted an air show. So we're hoping they'll come back soon. I might have to come to South Dakota. I don't know. Never know.
Yeah,
never
been July. There.
Well, that'd probably be the better time to come to South Dakota.
Definitely. July. It is cold and snowy right now. You don't want to come up here right now.
No, I do not. You are right. Okay. So I just want you to think about strategy, right? So one of the biggest things that I feel like for military service members, the disservice that they do themselves is that they don't think strategically about after the military, right? And so you're so focused on like doing your job well in the military, which obviously you have to be, you don't think about what can I do to help set myself up for after. And just the fact that you took on that new role, I think that's going to be a great asset to your post-military career. So as you're going through your military career, just start thinking strategically of what can I do? What education can I pursue? What certifications are relevant, which we're going to talk about later? What volunteer work can I do that will help me market myself after the military? Obviously, I want you to do the best job you can while you're in the military. This is your calling. This is something that you were driven to do and to sign up for. But what can you do to help yourself after? And that's something I always want you to keep in the back of your mind for the rest of your career.
Definitely. That's part of why I'm here right now with you, Lori.
Good. Okay. Well, good. What else can I answer for you?
All right. So since you already brought it up, we'll just slide right into the this great transition here. With so many different certifications out there, such as Certified Emergency Manager, Six Sigma, Project Management Professional, et cetera, while all have a positive impact on career path, what is the best way to pick the most effective certifications for any given career path? There's only so much Air Force school money to go around.
Right. So that is very true. So the first step in this process is research. So career field research and informational interviews. I want you to start doing informational interviews with emergency managers all over the place. I want you to look at, like, there are corporate emergency managers, and I know you're more interested in the public safety and continuing to give back to the public, but I want you to talk to what a corporate emergency manager does, just to get a sense of what their background is like. I want you to talk to a couple of emergency managers from different states and different cities of different sizes, right? So an emergency in South Dakota is very different than an emergency in Arizona, right? Or in Kansas. The three of us have very different emergencies, don't we? We have flash floods and we have heat warnings here. We have dust storms, right? Yeah, we have different weather. So you guys have snow, which actually, believe it or not, is snowing here in Arizona, not where I am, but where my kids live. And so we have different levels of emergencies, different types of emergencies. And I think talking to a lot of different emergency managers will give you a sense of what it's like. And maybe you can decide, like, what kind of a region do I want to live in? Do I want to deal with hurricanes or tornadoes? Do I want to deal with blizzards? So I think it can really give you a sense of the different levels. And then part of your question in that informational interview should be, like, what kind of certifications did you pursue, or what do you wish you'd pursued that you feel like would have been valuable to you? And tell them, like, I'm currently serving in the military, and planning for my future, which in about 9 years, I'd like to be entering this career field out in the private sector. If you could go back 9 years in your career, what would you do differently? Like, start asking those kinds of questions. And you're simply just out there asking for information, but you're gathering tools for your tool belt for the future, right? So I don't want you to just certification stuff, right? I'm putting that in quotes, just getting certifications to get certifications, right? So I don't want you to have, like, I don't know, your real estate license and your PMP and your, certified emergency manager and your Lean Six Sigma and your a massage therapist. And, I'm like going, obviously, so I want you to be strategic about your pursuit of education and certifications. So use that research and informational interviews to figure out what should I get and what do I think is not as useful. There are a lot of organizations out there that can help you further your education. So I know you're talking about Air Force Cool, but there are places like Boots to Books and Sigma Forces and Onward to Opportunity and IVMF that all help pay for these certifications. So use those resources. I would say that if you can avoid paying for these out of your pocket, that's great, because there are a lot of people out there that can help you. So, if it's relevant and if it doesn't distract you from your transition process and your mentors say you should have it, then go for it. But I don't want you to just have a bunch of unrelated, irrelevant certifications to kind of keep your options open, as many seem to think they need to do. A lot of times a lot of people say, well, I don't know what I want to do. And so I want people to know that I'm qualified. But when you try to throw everything in there, you try to appeal to everyone. What's the answer, right? You appeal to nobody. No. Yep. So you've heard me say it before. I feel like sometimes I'm a broken record on here, but that's really the truth. So I want you to be as focused and targeted as possible. Did that answer your question?
Yes. And we're actually, you're just the queen of transitions today, Lori, because we're rolling right into the next one off of that. So almost like you read these questions beforehand.
Almost like that.
So I've started to network a lot more via LinkedIn after becoming an avid listener of the podcast. I created my LinkedIn for TAFs, much like many transitioning service members. I've reached out to local professionals in my area. I actually had a sit down with the director of emergency management from one of the local hospitals on Thursday. So checking things off your list for the last question there. And have connected with members across the United States by finding my way into professional groups. However, I've still only made 300 or so connections on LinkedIn. I understand we're looking for quality over quantity, but that 500 seems to be that threshold where it unlocks a lot more for you. So do you have any recommendations to someone to amplify their network other than coming on your podcast?
Well, I bet you'll get some people reaching out after this. But so, you know, you've heard me say it, right? You want to grow your network on LinkedIn because the more connections you have, the more doors will open for you. It's really about exposure, right? So the more connections you have, when someone does a search and you've keyword optimized your profile, then the more likely you're going to be to show up in more people's searches when you have more connections, because they're going to list their first and second degree connections first on that list. Again, your more connections means you're more likely to show up in searches. So, but like you said, a quality network is really more important than the quantity. And so, yes, 500 seems to be LinkedIn's magic number when really things start rolling for you. But you don't have to do it because you're not looking to transition for 9 years. You don't have to do it by tomorrow, right? And so you really can have it with really good quality connections. So I think you're doing some of the right things by doing those informational interviews and joining some professional organizations. And by doing that, that will really help you to have good quality connections that can help refer you and provide mentorship to you as you're getting ready. I have like some guidelines for the different kinds of people that should be in your network. So first of all, you want people who can serve as a reference for you. It's important that you connect with more than just military people on LinkedIn, but connect with some former coworkers, supervisors, people that worked for you if you were a supervisor, so that you can ask them to provide personal recommendations for you. And, you know, just kind of go out there and strategically, once you've connected with them, have conversations with them and ask them if they would write a personal recommendation for you. So those people that can serve as a reference are really important. So if you haven't already and that's a great way, by the way, to stay in contact with former supervisors, is to be connected to them on LinkedIn. And so that, you know, you can continue to reach out to them and just so that they know where you're at, what you're doing, and they can still serve as a reference for you. The second kind of person is people who can refer you to jobs, right? So like recruiters and talent acquisition people at your target companies, maybe looking for fellow veterans who work for your target organizations. And then you can connect with them through your common background. So it sounds like you probably would rather work for like a municipality, a county, or a city. And so a state even, or, you know, a federal agency like FEMA. So start reaching out to people that work for those organizations that are in the type of role that you're looking for and connect with them, because they can definitely be a referral for you. The third type is someone who can educate and mentor you. So subject matter experts in your career field, maybe someone who is at the highest level of what you want to do. And we always think like, oh, they don't have time for me. But you would be amazed at the people that I've been able to have conversations with just through LinkedIn. And it's like, you know, like, God, they don't have time to be on LinkedIn. And there they are. And so, and they respond. So leaders, you know, influencers in your career field. So I think joining those career field organizations is a really good idea. And then just, you know, other people who offer kind of content in the emergency management field and guidance so that it spurs you to keep your knowledge and skills current. Okay. And then last but not least is the people that you want to work with or for. Potential peers, potential supervisors, people who can give you insight into the organization, into the career field, the industry that you want to work for. And so they can give you that, those informational interviews, and then someday down the road, be an internal referral for you. So hopefully you can have a nice mix of those kinds of people in your LinkedIn network.
Absolutely. I did want to, you know, throw my little bit in here too. You know, one of the professional connections I made was with that director of emergency management at the local hospital here. And it was actually his suggestion to sit down and go meet up and have coffee or have a Zoom call. So there are people willing out there to help you if you are willing to put the effort forward as well. Another connection that I made through LinkedIn is a major at the time. He was in the process of retiring, that's worked in the emergency management for the Air Force. So I connected with him, and he recommended to me that, hey, you need to, or hey, you should, it wasn't, hey, you need to, hey, you should look into doing these courses through FEMA, because at that time, because of COVID, they were online. So I didn't have to travel to the EMI. Yeah. So I was able to take time off from work and then attend those courses online through Adobe Connect. And I got a business continuity practitioner level one knocked out because of that connection and that that little bit of information being shared with me.
What you just mentioned is exactly how LinkedIn should work, right? And I think you're going to find that most people, and especially those who are also fellow service members, fellow veterans, are going to want to help you, even if it's just to give a little bit of advice and wisdom. And so if you hadn't met that retiring major, you wouldn't have known probably that FEMA was offering those courses online, and you wouldn't have to travel to be able to take them. So I just think it's those little, like, out there collecting those little bits of nuggets of wisdom, if you will, that I think are really important. So I think that's great. You already seem to be using LinkedIn well. And so maybe, you know, you were like, well, I have people from all of those categories. Now start branching out beyond those people and see who they're connected to, right? So I would look at the person you sat down with from the hospital and see, like, who are his connections? And, you know, you can actually go on someone's profile, look at all the people they're connected to, and connect with them. So that's another way of just, you know, like, hey, I had a conversation with, you know, John Smith, and I see that you're also connected. I'd love to add you to my professional network. Just send them a nice personal connection request with a couple of sentences. What else can I answer for you?
All right. So while we're sticking on that LinkedIn train here, I feel as if my job descriptions on my LinkedIn page has just become semi watered down EPR, enlisted performance report bullets. To me, it doesn't seem like that would be very welcoming to someone visiting my profile. Any suggestions on how to turn those EPR bullets and my accomplishments into a job description that would seem more appealing?
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about, like, why we need both a resume and a LinkedIn profile, right? So I want to talk about that first, and then we'll talk about how to get those bullet points whipped into shape. Your LinkedIn profile has become almost as important as your resume, because what your LinkedIn profile does for you is it serves as like a job search agent while you sleep, right? So while you go to work and do what you're doing all day, people are able to search and find you on your LinkedIn. So sometimes your LinkedIn profile is the very first time they've ever learned anything about you as a candidate. And so it does need to have those resume quality bullets of information and how you're adding value, just like your resume needs to have. So it's really important that it has it. And it's also really important that your LinkedIn and your resume are matched up in terms of timelines, in terms of, you know, the job titles that you've translated and all of that. And so we want to make sure those match up, but we don't want them to be a mirror of each other. You don't take your information from your resume and copy paste it into your LinkedIn, because sometimes people get your resume and they're like, oh, let me go check Cody out online and see what he's like out there on social media. And so they're going to find more and different information about you on LinkedIn. They don't want the same thing in their hand and in on their screen. And so think of your resume as very much a a focused, targeted marketing document in your LinkedIn is like you having a conversation about your experience with the person who's looking at it. And so I want your LinkedIn to add some of your personality. I want it to highlight kind of how you communicate with the world, and I want it to be more conversational, where we don't ever put the word I and me in a resume. It's fine to do that on a LinkedIn. So those are some of the biggest differences in how they're used. So we want to make sure keywords are in our LinkedIn profile, just like they are on our resume, because that's how you're going to show up in a search. And so we're going to write our bullets on our LinkedIn, kind of using that same formula. We've probably have all heard of the STAR formula, which stands for situation, task, action, result. And I really believe more in the RATS formula, which moves the result to the front, because the result really tells us like, what was the measurable impact of the situation and the task? Like, how did it make a difference? And if you can start with a measurable, tangible result, then you're going to capture people's attention and get them to keep reading. Because let's be honest, they really care about the result more than anything. So let's start with it. You want to talk about what you accomplished by using what skills. And so, you know, I just read today what I felt like was a kind of a dangerous statement. And it was from an influencer out there. And they said, don't translate your experience yet. Like, I shouldn't, as a military service member, if I can't understand what you did in the military, then you've over-translated. And I don't think that could be further from the truth. Like, your LinkedIn profile, your resume, they're about where you're going next, not where you've been, right? So you're highlighting the experience you've gained in the military as it relates to where you're headed next. And so you've got to translate, you've got to showcase. And so if your LinkedIn, and I forgot, I meant to look at it today and I didn't get to it because we were having technical issues. But if your LinkedIn is all about aviation maintenance, that's about where you've been. It's not about where you're going, right? So all of those things we talked about earlier with the, you know, what translates from aviation maintenance into emergency management, that's what should be in your LinkedIn as well as in your resume. But you probably haven't really fine-tuned your resume yet, but I want you to really think about how you can fine-tune your LinkedIn to start translating and focusing forward and thinking about how you've made an impact on, you know, like I just kind of mentioned that FOD program earlier, and reducing incidents and saving money and protecting, you know, the general public, the safety of the general public. So think about those types of things and really start thinking about your LinkedIn should start being focused on emergency management. It doesn't matter what you did every day as an aviation maintainer, because that's not what you want to do anymore. That came out wrong. It does matter, right? But that's not what I want your highlights to be. Your highlights need to be, how does what you do every day as an aviation maintainer matter to where you want to go next? Does that make sense?
That makes sense. Yep. And I would say, even though you didn't look at my profile, I can tell you it's very heavy what I've done, not where okay. I'm going.
Yeah.
So that's going to roll right into the next question here. Is my largest struggle in all of the entirety of LinkedIn from the time that I made it till currently is coming up with something to put in that summary section. That's not about where I've been, but about where I want to go. Any more words of wisdom?
Your summary, your work experience, your resume, your interview, whatever. The one thing I want you to remember is it's not about you. It's about the employer, right? But in the summary, I want you to talk about you. However, I want you to talk about you in a way that would an employer would care about, right? And so like, it probably doesn't matter that you were born in Podunk, Idaho, and you have 4 kids and you have 3 dogs and a cat and a lizard. That's cool. But does that tell me anything about what kind of an employee you're going to be? Tell me what you told me earlier about why emergency management. Like, why did you join the military in the first place? Why did you go back to be a guardsman? Like, why did you decide to go toward emergency management? why do you think it's the right career field for you? What is it about your personality and who you are that you think is going to make you a really good emergency manager? Talk about like what drives you, and talk about what's important to you, showcase some of your personality. And so that's really what your summary should be about, right? So again, you want to be brief. I know you get 2,500 characters, I think. You don't have to use them all. If you can tell everything I just said in a couple of paragraphs, that's great. But know that people are going there to get a sense of like, who is Kobe? Right? So how does he communicate with the world? Like, why is he in this career field? So be engaging, like show some personality, show your communication style, show your enthusiasm about the subject that they're reading about, right? So make sure you're reaching out to your audience. Like, what's your audience going to really care about? What do they think is important? Showcase your value. Like, how are you going to bring a benefit to an organization? So, and you know, maybe that's with experience, but it also could be planning. It also could be public service. It also could be that you've operated in a high pressure, high stakes environment your entire career. And you understand the importance of being calm under pressure and in an emergency situation. So, I mean, maybe there's a story that you want to tell, like a turning point for you. I once had a pilot who had a story about, you know, where he was at on 9/11. Like, he was one of the only F-16s in the air that day. And he didn't have any weapons on board. And they asked him to respond. And so what does that mean? Like, had that airplane not grounded itself, it would have been his responsibility to take care of that. And like, that just tells you about who he is as a person and the decisions that he's had to make. And so like, is there a story you can tell about that? You know? So just, again, I want you to be personal in there a little bit. Tell me a little bit about like your background and tell me a little bit about kind of who you are. That makes sense?
Absolutely. Yes. And I'm going to have to go back and re-listen to this once the podcast comes out, because there's a lot of information in here that you have given me that I'm going to need to refresh when it comes to writing that summary.
No problem. Please feel free. And we need all the listens we can get, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Is that all your questions that you came with today?
That is all the questions that I came with today.
I hope that even though you felt like I voluntold you to come on the show, I hope that you felt like it's been of value to you. And I promise you, if you're listening to this and you're in the transition process and you have questions, that there are going to be others that have the same questions as you, and I would love to be able to answer them for you. So please reach out to me. I would love to have more of these Q&A sessions on the show, but sometimes I have a hard time roping you all into it. I promise. Am I scary, Cody?
No, you're not. Okay. just those pre-show jitters of, holy cow, I'm meeting Lori Norris online after listening to her for the last 2 years. Starstruck.
Now that's silly. Well, I appreciate you putting yourself out there and being willing to come on the show, even with those jitters. I have no doubt that your second transition is going to go more smoothly, because I know you're taking ownership of it, and I commend you for that. So thank you so much for sharing your questions with us today.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast. If you learned just one lesson today that you believe can help you in your military transition, then I've done my job. Please don't keep this podcast a secret. Share it with as many of your active duty service member friends and transitioning veterans who may be struggling with that process as possible. Please subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review, and join our YouTube channel so you don't miss any lessons that we share.